Big show for you here today. Nate Tice is back in the Fantasy Film Room. We have a bunch of stuff to get to. We talk defenses that are surging in the back half of the season and why they might be some matchups to avoid for your fantasy playoff run. We also somehow get into a discussion about Will Levis and why Nate is nerding out about Will Levis. Yeah, don't check your earbuds, folks. That is what I'm saying. We also give an injury report update and a Thursday night preview. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Thursday, December 5th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast presented by healthcare.gov. And it is, baby, it's a hell of a day to talk ball. And join me to do just that is Nate Tice. Nate, welcome back, buddy. Missed you last week. What's going on?
Not too much. Yeah, healthcare.gov, as I'm clearing my throat before we start this podcast every single time. You know, just make sure you get your flu shots and your updated boosters and everything. You know, I just want to, you know, parlay or work off of the sponsor to just say, to give my own little PSA, give your own little message, because colds are going around. I'm just getting over one. Make sure you stay up to date on all that stuff. But yeah, I'm doing great, Matt.
I was going to say, I mean, number one sponsor, very happy with you. It's sixth season. As you are a person with a child, so you are you are very susceptible to becoming sick as a childless person. Happily a childless person. I am a non-father figure. I am very disease-free, sick-free. Literally never Lucky. Felt better, Nate. So I can't relate.
My son is obsessed with brushing his teeth right now, which is cool. It's a good habit to have. And reading. He's big into reading right now. It's great. But the obsession with brushing his teeth is not just with his toothbrush. It's with my toothbrush as well. He likes going in the bathroom and just going, teeth, teeth. And then, yeah, okay, I guess we have the same germs. Yeah. And then when he has a cold, though, guess who catches that thing instantly? Me. This guy does. Yeah. So something cute. And I was just like, well, this is not a great PSA for washing hands and not spreading germs or anything like that. But yeah, when you have a child, sometimes it's not your choice. You just want to make them happy. And that's one of those that my sacrifice that I made.
It's so funny you mentioned that, and we will get into the show here in a second, but my niece is also going through the same thing. She's about 1.5 years old. She'll be two in February. So actually coming up on two. She said to me the other day, she goes, I'm two. No. Try again. No, you're not. Not yet. But anyway, so she's obsessed with brushing her teeth too, to the point that when we were at my sister's house for Thanksgiving, especially like a couple days, she literally every time we goes back to the bathroom, like teeth, like brush teeth. And it's like, all right, it's your turn. I think I had shift four with her brushing her teeth, to the point like she will not stop. Like she will get upset with you if you try to take her away from doing it. So, I mean, hey, the latest generation, the kids are all right, man, with the brushing the teeth thing.
I know dentists are happy. Dental hygienists. Well, maybe they're not. Maybe it's just going, oh, it's too clean. Can't get that cavity in there now. But no, it's a good habit. Just give them a Bluey toothpaste. You know, they love, does your niece love Bluey?
Yeah. It's amazing. No, not Bluey. She's into like all that stuff, but I don't think she's got the toothpaste.
Bluey's actually fantastic. It's really? Australian kids show. I highly recommend it. But Bluey toothpaste, and you get the toothbrush and it lights up. And now it's a game. So it's a good habit. There's a lot worse habits out there. It's a good habit to have. Yeah. So I will gladly stand as he brushes his back molars for the 40th time in the day.
Incredible. Well, yeah.
Good start.
Dental hygiene has definitely shifted from when I was a kid, at least what I remember.
Yeah.
Also shifting, Nate Tice, nice. Is what Good we're going to discuss here in the Fantasy Film Room. We will, of course, get to all of our usual segments, what Nate is nerding out about. We'll get to our injury report segment. We'll also preview Thursday Night Football. But in the main discussion here today, we're going to talk a little bit of defenses that are shifting, or it's time for us to recalibrate our expectations for these defenses based on recent performances, because this is important, Nate. The fantasy playoffs are coming up, right? And people do this all the time, like early in the season. It's like, hey, look at that playoff schedule. Look at those defenses there. You got this team. Oh, man, that's a juicy matchup. Or, week 16, that defense is kind of a stay away. Well, changes pretty quick around here, all right? And that is definitely the case with some of these offenses, but it's important to talk about the other side of the ball here for some of these matchups that people are going to have to consider over the next few weeks. So we're going to try to take like a next month plus look at this, looking at some of these defenses that have changed recently. So I just went back to week 8 and just did the top 10 defenses by EPA per play, and I identified 5 pretty surprising ones in this top 10. We can maybe talk about some others, this, that, and the other, but mostly I want to focus on these 5 teams. So top 10 defenses by EPA per play allowed since week 8. The Lions are number 1. I think that's still that might not be as much of a surprise, but I think it merits a discussion here. Mm-hmm. So they're number 1. I think they're one of the surprises. Number 2 is the Eagles. At this point, that's not a surprise. The Eagles have been, I think, the best defense in the NFL this year. We know them. We've talked about them a lot on the show. Number 3, though, the Seattle Seahawks. Definitely a surprise. Number 4, the Bills. Not really that surprising.
Yeah.
Number 5, the Texans, Broncos. Like, these aren't surprises. But number 7, Nate Tice's Arizona Cardinals are number 7, a top 10 defense since week 8. Number 8, the Dolphins. I still count them as a little bit of a surprise. And then the Vikings, not a surprise. But number 10, the Dallas Cowboys.
Yes.
That is a big surprise because, Nate, that is one of the matchups that people definitely circled. Like, oh, playoff schedule, the Cowboys are on there. That's pretty juicy. But at least since week 8, they've turned it around. So I want to talk about those 5 teams in particular, but just general thoughts on defensive transition as the year has gone on.
Yeah, the Lions defense is one of those that's really impressed me. I mean, the Lions overall. It's just now, you know, that they're dealing with a lot of injuries. Right. The entire team there in Detroit is facing a lot of injuries, but especially on the defensive side. And it's ones where, you know, when they have multiple injuries, you know, stacking up into one position. Here it's linebacker for the Lions. They still have good players there, Jack Campbell, and then I believe they signed David Long, who was last with the Dolphins and everything. But they, you know, they have an injury to Malcolm Rodriguez, who was placed on IR. Now they have Alex Anzalone, who was also on IR with a forearm injury, but that's 2 of their starting linebackers. Mm-hmm. They've been amazing against the run this year. They're really stout. DJ Reader and Lee McNeil have been great in the middle. Even after the Aiden Hutchinson injury, that they've just stayed as a really good defense. I think they're going to have some drop off just because of natural injury stuff, but I still think this is going to be a very good defense because they still have, like I said, they still have Campbell. They still have some answers to figure things out. They are getting some reinforcements soon, hopefully, on the back end. But I do think that that this defense, it's just that they just got hit with some injuries. But they might be more of a 10th-ish defense than this number 1 EPA per play. But this is a good defense. This is real. The numbers match the eye test here. This has just been one of the most intriguing things, I think, throughout the NFL. How much big bodies the Lions use, how they play a ton of man coverage on 3rd and 4th down, and a lot of teams just can't beat it because they're just so aggressive. They have a lot of guys that can win against that. So, you know, this Lions defense, you can catch them every once in a while, but they're going to make it a slog on the ground, and they make it boom bust through the air on passing downs. But I think the injuries will catch up just naturally the next couple weeks, but I still think this is a good defense, but maybe not that number 1 tier.
Yeah, and when you look at the opponents, obviously that's going to be a part of this too. You look since week 8, they've played the Titans, the Packers, the Texans. Obviously that's not that great of an offense at this point. The Jaguars, the Colts, and then the Bears, rookie quarterback, a bit of a messy performance this last week. So that's obviously going to be doing some of the heavy lifting here. The rest of the season, it's the Packers, it's the Bills, it's the Bears again, the Niners, and then the Vikings in week 18. So it's like there's definitely some tougher tests, I think, on this side of that stretch here. And it'll be interesting, right? You mentioned the fact they play so much man coverage. They've definitely overall dialed back on the amount of man coverage they've played because I think you could tell that that's what they wanted to do to start the year. And man, it's such a shame. The Hutchinson injury, obviously some of the injuries they've had on the back end, because it's just such a fun style of defense to watch teams go against. Yeah. I always say I don't know if I've said this on the show, but I always really like watching receivers go against the Colts. Nate, because it feels very familiar. You know, it feels like, ah, oh, this is the old bar I used to come to when I was in my 20s. Yeah. You know, they've got the same specials, all that. Because it's Gus Bradley does a little bit different, but not too much different from what, you know, was going on in like the early 2000s and stuff like that, or the mid 2010s with the Legion of Boom and things like that. So it's true, like this. It reminds me of watching receivers when I first started like charting for Reception Perception.
This isn't cover three. This is nice.
Like I said, it's so comfortable. I would say that like watching receivers go against the Lions, it's not the same effect, but it's very much like, oh, especially when they're playing that man coverage, it's like this is a real deal test of like alpha receivers here.
Yep, it is. And because I mean, you could see how they signaled it with who they sign or trade for Carlton Davis, but then, you know, drafting Terrion Arnold in the first round. They got guys, and then Ennis Rakestraw was the other, their second round pick. Those are all feisty man coverage guys, like guys that play with an aggressive nature, like just overall. Carlton Davis tries to fight everybody that he tries to play against. So they went for a certain type, and it just makes sense because if you look at how Dan Campbell, the guys they draft, the guys they sign, it's all competitive guys. And there's nothing more competitive than man-to-man coverage. One-on-one, no help. All right. And then they let their guys press all the way. Some teams will be a little loose with that. So yeah, they want to test these guys and want to take it to them. Again, it's one of these things where it's like, I'm like, oh, they might have a drop off here. They kind of keep finding answers. So that's where I'm curious what this next month of answers is going to be for them. Because you asked me 2 weeks ago, I thought the Lions were the best team in the NFL and then still think really good things about their offense and their special teams. And then I still think the defense has answers, but now I'm like, oof, okay, how they figured this one out? Because this is now a new test that they have to figure out, especially with the style they want to play.
One thing that's been a consistent issue for them all season is giving up production to slot receivers. They're number two in yards allowed to slot receivers. The Chiefs are actually number one. The Chiefs, by the way, are the other end of this, where their defense looks great to start the year. They're 26th in EPA allowed since week 8. Maybe we can talk about that before we throw it a break here. But just when we're looking at the Lions, I think that remains kind of the biggest weak point for this defense when you just look at production allowed. We'll talk maybe a little bit about that in week 14, this matchup against the Packers for Thursday Night Football. But like Buffalo, Khalil Shakir in week 15, week 16, Keenan Allen, we saw him have a big game against them on Thanksgiving. Week 17, I guess San Francisco, that's like Ricky Pearsall, maybe. We'll see who the hell's playing for San Francisco by then. But so just a couple of things to note there about those slot receivers. Because that's like, if you're a slot receiver that can beat man coverage, to me, overall, I want slot receivers to beat zone coverage because you're going to see those zones over the middle of the field. That's how they can just pile up production. But really, the difference makers at slot are the guys that can also beat man.
Yep.
And I would say that Jaden Reed, Khalil Shakir, and even this what's left declined version of Keenan Allen can still beat man in some of those ISO situations. So that's pretty important for these next three matchups.
Yeah, absolutely. And shoot, I mean, the other team, we're not going to talk about them, but this is kind of what we saw the other night with the Broncos. That, okay, they're going to put Surtain on somebody when Riley Moss is not in there. Who is Surtain not guarding? Okay, go to him. And you just saw, and that's kind of the same thing with the Lions a little bit too. It's that like, all right, who's their third corner guarding? When they do not want to be in nickel with five DBs. They like to play base a lot. We've talked about this a little bit on Football 301 with four DBs out there and three linebackers. That's why this is even more interesting that they have linebacker injuries. So now do they play more nickel? Play more of those guys that they maybe weren't keen on putting out there. They have other guys, like I said, in the back end, maybe coming back in the next couple of weeks. So we'll see how that kind of goes.
All right, let's talk about one of the teams that kind of inspired this segment for me, which is Seattle. They're number three in EPA per play allowed since week 8. And it's funny because they're one of these teams that, what a journey we've been on with them, because first few weeks of the season, it's like, their defensive numbers are great. Then but their opponents weren't very good. And then they started to play some tougher teams and it was just not a good product there. Basically from like week 4 to week 8, they're one of the more generous defenses in the league. They're 21st in EPA allowed since from weeks 1 to week 8. If you cut those first 3 weeks out, weeks 4 to week 8, they're like the 29th ranked defense in the league. But then they've come back here recently. It's looked really good, especially against Arizona, who they're playing again this week. So pretty critical to break down there. What's gone into this defensive sort of I don't know, like just the improvement here the last few weeks.
Yeah. First off, Mike McDonald, the head coach's defensive game plans are going to take a minute to kind of sink in. They can be complicated on the back end. They're going to be very hyper-specific. Very hyper-specific. Very great wording there. But they can just very, they're really week to week, and they get better with time as the players get more comfortable. You can see the back end really feeling that. But then they went and traded for Ernest Jones, who was already traded earlier in the season from LA to the Titans, and then they get him from the Titans. But that was, it's a great cutoff for this exercise because they traded for Ernest Jones in week 8. So, and you mentioned you have the stats for EPA per play being third. And with Ernest Jones on the field, it's just the on off splits are just ridiculous. I know that can be noisy and everything, but when the guy's on the field every snap, once he's traded for, it's like, it doesn't matter. You know, not only just the EPA per play with Ernest Jones, they're 7th in success rate. Or if that was the whole season, they are 5th in EPA per play overall. You know, just that number, if you just stack it up for the entire season. So with Jones and with this defense and being so multiple, I know that's kind of a jokey word, you know, kind of overused word, but it is a multiple defense. Okay, we're running cover 3 here. Okay, we're running man. Okay, we're doing this simulated pressure. Okay, we're doing this blitz. You need guys down the spine, slot, linebackers, safeties that can be multiple, that are smart, be in the right spot, just be in the right gap, because it just how they use their bodies matters just as much as the talent level. Ernest Jones is a solid linebacker, better against the run, and then against the pass, he just knows to be in the right spot. And I just, you could feel the difference with him on the field, especially against the run. They got big bodies up front. Byron Murphy coming back from injury too has helped as well, their first round pick. But Leonard Williams is playing the best ball of his career. They have guys that can keep.
He is balling beyond just the interception return last week. He's played extremely good football for this team.
He's been like, if you just look like we do like a half season awards and everything. If we just did quarter 3 of the season awards, he's the defensive player of the year. Like if you just had the last like 3-4 weeks, that's it. Defensive player of the third quarter, Leonard Williams. But him, those guys keep the linebackers clean. But when that happens, the linebackers have to be right. Like they can't be go rogue. Even if they don't make the sexiest tackles, they at least have to be in, the body has to be in the gap. Ernest Jones is in the gap. So that is the difference really that's going on, is that their spine has been rebuilt. The back end does really nice things. Devin Witherspoon, Julian Love, Tyreek Woolens is whatever at this stage in his career. He's kind of up and down, but he can do some nice things. But really the back end is smart. Now they get the linebackers figured out. The defensive front can get some pressure. They bring some cool blitzes. That's really the difference, is that this defensive scheme has sunk in to the personnel where now they feel comfortable in it. And now they upgraded a huge glaring weakness from poor to, I'd say, above average to maybe good for Ernest Jones. But that's a huge difference. And that's really, it's made the big difference. And you can see it with the stats and see it when you watch them on the eye test.
6th in rushing success rate allowed since week 8, which, again, if you just actually look at since the bye, they've been even better than that. And it's not as if they played like joke teams either. Depending on what you think of the Jets, but still, they've got some talented players. Yeah. So it's going to be interesting watching this matchup here with Arizona, because I would say that the thing that Seattle's probably still the weakest in is defending like perimeter receivers, because you mentioned like Tariq Woolen. They've gotten some better play from the other spot there too. But still, like I would say that if you're picking somewhere, you're not trying to pick on those linebackers. You're probably not trying to establish the run at this point. You're probably going to try to go on the perimeter. It's not really what Arizona does. And, you know, the whole hit and miss stuff with Marvin Harrison, that's been a big talking point as well. So and then they get the Packers in week 15. Definitely some spots to pick there. Week 16, Minnesota Vikings, Justin Jefferson. Week 17, the Chicago Bears. A lot of incestuous teams here that we're talking about so far. They're playing a lot of the same teams. So that's interesting. I would just say, like, I love your point about how things take a minute to soak in with Mike McDonald's defense. That's just kind of true with this whole Seattle team, I think, overall right now, which we talked about this a couple weeks ago on 301, that they're my pick, I think, right now, that I feel the best about to win the division. It was funny, but that was before the Cardinals game, and maybe I did say the Cardinals then. But right now, I still feel the best about Seattle, because I think they've figured out their defense. And even if you look at week 8 on the offensive side of the ball too, all 5 of those games, JSN has been the leading receiver, and that, I think, is a big a big turning point to kind of like, okay, this is, we should do this more with our offense and less of the, like, just emphasizing deep shots.
Yeah. The offense is cleaned up a little bit. The switches along the offensive line, Abe Lucas coming back is huge, but the center switch to, after Williams retired, to Oluwatimi has been huge. Mm-hmm. Like he has solidified them so much. It's not, again, it's not all great, but, the second half of the Jets, they're really a good second half team. We've talked about this before, but they really are. They adjust really well on both sides. The second half against the Jets was really encouraging as far as what their run game looked like. It was clean. Guys are going to the right spots. They're winning one-on-ones. It's not just pure scheme stuff. And like, that's the encouraging thing, was just, okay, mental things are one thing, but like, if you just lose one-on-ones physically, then it's just like, all right, what else can we do? So winning one-on-ones is like, oh, okay, all right. So I'm with you that the Seahawks are, they're putting together good stuff, even if it's some incomplete stuff, like the first and goal sequence that ended with a sprint out pass on fourth and goal. But other than that, there's some good stuff happening with this team. They're just, the line coach has been a little disappointing to me. I will say that. Yeah.
The whole run game and the offensive line is just I don't know.
There's not, there's a lack of detail. It's a college O-line coach, and I was giving him a chance, but it looks like a college O-line coach is coaching this team. Like, as far as just the offensive line stuff, just there's some lack of detail stuff that's a little, they have to clean it up in the offseason. Not saying fire the guy, but they have to clean it up in the offseason.
Do you have any thoughts on how this rematch with the Cardinals will go with this team? Because that can transition us to the next team we're going to talk about, is Arizona. Because So again, this game in particular, I think, was the one that caused me to say to Colin, like, hey, let's put a pin in this. When we come back after Thanksgiving, I want to do a film room episode with Nate on what this defense turning around, and Arizona too. But because I was expecting like a lot more, I'm just straight up was expecting a lot more offensive fireworks in that game based on kind of what I was liking seeing from Seattle. Yeah. And then also Arizona, what they were doing coming off of the bye, and 16-6 was the final score.
I know, 16-6 with 17 first downs and 15 first downs. It wasn't like, oh, they got a fluky red zone, you know, turnover or something like that. I'm excited to watch this game again. I like the scheme on all four sides here, so it's kind of fun. Sorry, special teams. But I think that game is that they beat the Seahawks defense, beat the crap out of the Cardinals run offense, which is no one has really done, you know, at least that consistently. It was like they only had like two successful runs on the entire game, which is absurd.
James Conner, just from his standpoint, at seven carries for 8 yards.
Yeah, and it was tough defense. They were on their stuff. They're really playing the pullers really well. When I watch it, that's what you want out of the Seahawks. You know, the Seahawks defense is that it's hyper specific with the game plans. Okay, you do this, we're gonna do this. Now, it's interesting, though. I don't really like when two teams play each other in 3 weeks, like two times in three weeks. I don't know. But these staffs will be interesting because they adjust so well. I think there will be more points here. I did think the Cardinals did do some nice things. They just kind of weren't all the way, couldn't get over the hump kind of feeling when I was watching this game. They were able to move the ball a little bit. Just the run game was such a slog. You already brought up the point. It's like the outside hitting stuff has to be there. You know, that's where some teams have gotten after this Jets or this Seahawks defense. Even last week, the Jets offense, like Devontae Adams had a couple nice moments on the outside. Devontae Adams, Marvin Harris Jr., not putting them in the same breath, but just saying, both outside receivers. So I don't know, like, that game surprised me too. I do think that both of these defenses are so much better and so much more improved than people realize. I just think the Cardinals will have a few more answers and maybe not get caught in this one, in this matchup. But I do think it's gonna be a fun one, where kind of a 24-20-ish type game, if I had to predict it. Just a little more scoring, maybe not a total shootout though.
No, I think that sounds about right. It'll be interesting to see if they can get that run game going there, because not only do the Seahawks play the Cardinals this week, typically a very good, you know, disciplined run team, they get the Packers in week 15, and the Packers have just They're great on these gap scheme runs. Yep. Josh Jacobs is balling out right now. So I'm interested to watch these 2 weeks to see if we can test this kind of Seahawks run defense. It's just been so good in recent weeks. All right, let's get to the Cardinals and their defense, because this is definitely something that I think people are not talking enough about, is the way this defense is played. But before I do that, I wanted to share this stat from Aaron Schatz. Seahawks at Cardinals is by far the most important game of the week for the playoff picture in our Sims. And obviously he's working at FTN now, was at Football Outsiders for a long time. In our Sims, a Seahawks win would make the Seahawks 62% to make the playoffs, with the Cardinals 17%. With a Cardinals win, it would be 71% for Arizona and 11% for Seattle. So this is definitely a big game, but I want to focus on this Cardinals defense, which, you know, it's for a long time. I mean, he's been there for not even 2 full years, but for most of the time Jonathan Gannon has been there, it's been, that's cute. They're doing a lot of like, that's cute. They're doing a lot of fun stuff. Well, great. The defense is still one of the worst in the league. In this sample size we're dealing with since week 8, they're the 7th defense in EPA per play allowed. Why is that?
Oh, man. It's, I wish I had some magic bullet. It's just that they are like just going like, yeah, this is, they've done this one thing that companies hate that they do, but it's really, it's just players playing better. That's really what it is. It's just that they have such a fun, they've gotten healthier too. Not Dennis Gardick, RIP, he's hurt right now, but you know, they traded for, oh my god, what's his name, Baron Browning from the Broncos.
Yeah, from the Denver Broncos.
From Broncos, who's a good pass rusher. Yeah, Baron Browning, sorry. But they also, other guys have gotten hurt. They got their first round pick back from injury, Darius Robinson. Other players are just playing well. Dante Stills has been really stepped up, number 55. I've always liked this nose tackle they have, Roy Lopez. He's played well for 2 years. They have really just figured out their personnel. And this defense is, it's Nick Rawls as a defensive coordinator, which is, I've talked about this before, but I've known Nick since he was like 7. He has 2 older brothers. One was a year above me, one was a year below me in high school. And so I played football with both of them. With a younger brother, ended up playing at the University of Minnesota. They both, Nick and the one brother, both played at Minnesota as linebackers. The one brother, Mike, ended up being a wrestler in WWE, known as Riddick Moss. They're great people. So I've known Nick though, and he was 6-7 years younger than me. But I've known him for a while, and so it's kind of cool to see him kind of rise up the ranks to be the freaking youngest play caller in the league right now.
Yeah.
And he's trying. Like, that's what it was kind of cool to watch last year. It was like, they try stuff. It's just not good, and they get gashed. Like, even watching week 1 against the Bills, it's like, all right, that's cool. I get what you're trying to do there, but then they are still getting gashed. It's just that now players are playing better, and they're playing just more sound, and also just the personnel they have is unique. Like a guy that kind of like encapsulates it. Sorry. I've been waiting to talk about this, so I'm pretty excited. Zaven Collins, former first round pick from Tulsa. Is he an off ball linebacker? Is he pass rusher? No one can really figure him out. This defense gets in there and Rawls gets in there, and they kind of use him as a hybrid player in a true hybrid sense. Sometimes you're an edge. Sometimes you're lined up over the guard and we're going to drop you into coverage. Sometimes you're lined up over the guard and you're going to be part of this twist. Sometimes you're going to cover the running back, and sometimes you're going to be the deep running cover 2 pole player. And they've used these hybridness. Buda Baker's another one, and they weaponized it. Okay, we'll just get a bunch of these mixture players and just have one true defensive lineman and 6 linebackers out there and just run funky stuff. We don't know who's going into coverage. We don't know who's blitzing. They caught Sam Darnold in the Vikings pass protection several times last week. They did really well with the blitz. And they're tackling better. They're just not letting up those big gashes that were happening before. It was so boom bust before by design, because they were just like, this is how we have to win. Now they're winning down to down. They don't have to be as funky on 1st and 2nd down. They don't have to do some of the craziness stuff and, you know, mold these guys around, move them around, have them flying every which way. So it's just that they've just become a more cohesive unit as guys have gotten healthier. They've gotten some reinforcements and just players understand the scheme and trimming out some fat. So I've actually been surprised. Like, I mean, they're 9th in DVOA, and I've noticed that they've been better, but I didn't realize it was this much better. I thought they'd be more like, oh, they're 17th, 18th now. as opposed to 29th, 30th, 31st, like they were the last year and a half. So really, I wish I had, again, oh, they're doing this one scheme thing. They're just doing a lot of still the funkiness and still a lot of the cool exotic looks. It's just that these players are now just understanding exactly how to be used and what they're doing.
It kind of sounds like the inverse of what we talked about yesterday on 301 with the Bengals, where it's you're just giving a lot of snaps to a lot of young players and
yes,
nobody's getting better. Like just nobody's improving. And then here in Arizona, they've been given a lot of snaps to, I mean, a lot of those names you read out and you just look at like the depth chart, I would guarantee like probably people that listen to this podcast are smart. All right. But I would guarantee probably like 80% of those, that might be generous. Like 80% of the people listening to this couldn't like name five of those dudes before you started listing off the players. It's not other than Buda Baker. It's not a lot of big names on this defense. Maybe people remember Zaven Collins from when he was drafted. And that's a great like anecdote. Cause that's been one of the interesting things to watch is the way he's been used on this defense.
But yeah,
it kind of sounds like just listen, there's a process here. We're going to do this. We're going to do some funky stuff here, and it's going to look really bad for a little bit. But the longer we do this, the more time we have on task, the more this can turn into positive results for the overall unit. I also, Nate, do not have like a silver bullet of this is why, but this is at least interesting in kind of prepping for the show. I did notice that since week 8, they are number one in man coverage rate on third and fourth down since week 8. And that's pretty stark opposite from what we saw early in the year.
Which was all cover two, right? It was like, wow, that's a really good stat. And yeah, coverage wise, they've just been better. This is the coverage they're using now, but maybe that's what it is. Just maybe some more man stuff and maybe just changing up their blitzes, because so many of the blitzes and the simulated stuff would be zone pressures. And that can get gashed, I think, sometimes more easily because you're voiding a spot. Okay, and if the quarterback can find it, boom, done. You know, that's a big play. So maybe going to more man coverage actually is a good little changeup that they're using. So that's a good little stat.
Yeah, fourth fewest in weeks 1-7 on third and fourth down in terms of man coverage, fifth most since week 8. So that's at least interesting. And just teams they're coming up playing, obviously Seattle. You know, JSN's the only one that really did anything for them offensive-wise, and that makes sense. We've talked about him as like a man coverage beating slot receiver, so that makes sense there. Patriots in week 15, don't have to really worry about anybody.
I was going to say,
a lot of man coverage there.
Watch out for the 55 yards to Pop Douglas, you know.
Right, maybe he gets to 65. He is a better man beater than a zone beater, which is weird for a slot guy, but still. Panthers in week 16. Rams in week 17, that's the obviously one to watch. Yeah. They do a ton of stuff to beat man with Puka Nacua lately. Have you seen Puka Nacua's like per route start stats lately? It's like bonkers.
Oh, really? I'm writing about all the NFC West teams this week, and do you know that Stafford is the best quarterback against zone in the NFL, like success rate wise? And he's a bottom five quarterback against man. Stat wise,
if you look at the zone stuff for the receivers, Nakua's 33% targets per route run against zone, and Cooper Kupp is 31.3. So that's like they're both top five. They're both top five.
Okay. Yeah, I got it right here. Okay, so excuse me. Yeah, so Stafford's had 52 dropbacks with Kupp and Nakua on the field against man coverage. He's 14th in dropback success rate. I'm sorry. 16th in EPA per dropback. Overall, like I think it was even with him on or off the field, he was bottom five. Against zone, 97 dropbacks, 52.6% success rate first. The league average is 45%. 14% explosive pass rate, and then tied for seventh in EPA per dropback against zone. So it's like, and you watching the Saints game is what kind of like maybe go like, they're on the Saints were doing a ton of man and the Rams were kind of having some issues with it. So that's kind of like why I started pulling at that thread. it's so nice when you see something eye test and then you look at the stat and you go, ha ha, there it is right there. Cause that was the one, I know we're talking about the Cardinals and the Seahawks, but yeah, the Rams are interesting too, just to see how what they're doing on offense.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating that week 17 matchup, obviously, fantasy championships for people. Because, yeah, Puka's per route stats against man is also crazy. He leads the NFL 43.6 target rate on his routes against man coverage, 3.96 yards per route run, again, which is one of the highest figures among like relevant receivers. So, and he's been great this year, and I think he's just he stands out among the rest of receivers, which are not really man beaters at this point in Cooper Kupp's career. So that's obviously going to be important with how much of this man coverage that the Cardinals are playing. Let's quickly touch on the Dolphins, just because I don't know if they really qualify as like a surprising defense, but maybe for me, I've been slow to the update on the Dolphins defense being as good as it's been this year.
Dolphins have been one of the most confusing teams for me. I know we've talked about it a little bit, Charles and I, when we've talked about it. It's one of those where it's like, oh yeah, they have really good players and they don't run like they do a scheme that's like puts them in good spots. And I know that I'm not saying anything crazy here, but that's really what it is. It's like, oh yeah, Jalen Ramsey's pretty dang good. Oh yeah, Calais Campbell's playing like found the fountain of youth this year. But then Zach Salier, Jordan Brooks was a great signing for this defense. This feels right. They've looked like a top. I mean, ever since the Tua injury, this has looked like a top 12 defense, I would put it, and really one that's just made it tough on a lot of teams. You got to credit, you know, what the Packers did on Thursday, and I think they got some cold weather boost in that game. I think the Dolphins missed like 20 something tackles. But I do think that this is a good defense. It's just that we talked about this yesterday with the funeral episode. It's just the Dolphins kind of feel, I won't say they've totally given up, but it's just kind of, I don't know, that last Thursday game was kind of like, oh, okay, this is it. They kind of made their bed for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that this defense has played well pretty much all year, even when the offense was completely going in the tank, which I think has to drive some of those veteran guys on that side of the ball pretty crazy.
Yeah.
They do. Right. Their final stretch is interesting. They get a lot of teams that in the beginning of the year would have looked like, oh, this is a tough offense for a defense that makes it tough.
Right.
Well, they get the Jets, in week 18, and they get the Jets this week. They get the Texans in week 15, the Niners in week 16, and then the Jameis Winston Browns in week 17. So that could be another 4-touchdown, 3-interception game with Jameis there.
You feeling lucky? Yeah. It's in your fantasy championship. You're going to go against Jameis in the fantasy championship would be a fun one.
Oh my God. Yeah. What a life. Jameis Winston, right? Baby.
Hey, he won. I had the Broncos defense in the fantasy league and it won me the game. And it was like a 2-point game.
32 points.
They had Njoku. So it went Njoku touchdown. And I was like, oh, pick six. Njoku touchdown. Oh, pick six. My game couldn't bend more. One side, big play, both sides on that one. So yeah. So if you want to go against Jameis there. This Dolphins team overall is just one of those where it's like, I want more from them, like in the sense where it's like I want them to achieve more because I do like so much of what they do. I like some of the players. But again, I think Bradley Chubb is practicing again, maybe this week. Mm. I think I just saw that. Don't quote me on that, but I think I did. But that's another guy, like him and Jalen Phillips being hurt. Okay, cool. Like imagine if they were playing for this defense.
Right,
this defense would be freaking top five, top four. But the fact that they're playing this well, even without those two, is just, you know, significant. Chop Robinson has had a great year, really come on as a rookie too. Like he's got a lot of pass rushing juice, so. Kind of just want to mention that it's a good defense. It's just they're in a tough situation.
Just because we talked Jameis Winston, now I have to share the stats because I was hoping to find a place to say it on the show. This is from @OptaStats on Twitter. Jameis Winston threw for 497 yards tonight, obviously Monday night. The Broncos had 171 interception return yards against him. The 668 combined passing yards plus interception return yards off of his passes is the most by any quarterback in a single game in NFL history. What a stat, and what a perfect Jameis Winston stat.
That's a great stat. Oh, that's so fitting. That is just like a perfectly fitting one. That or it'd be like he set the record for touchdowns and it's like he threw for five and he threw three pick sixes or something like that. Like those would be the perfect.
Maybe he'll do it against this Dolphins defense in week 17. Don't rule it out. All right. Final team we're going to talk about here is the Cowboys. Which when I put this on the doc, I knew there was like a 1000% chance we'd get a note from Colin on this. So I will share. I don't often share producer Colin's notes, but I will here because this is a good one. So shout out to Colin. You get your Christmas bonus this year, buddy. Producer Colin note, this game against the Bengals, obviously here in week 14, will be the first time Overshawn, Bland, Diggs, He's got a groin injury, but he's probably going to play. And Micah Parsons will all be on the field together ever. And you mentioned that Overshown has played well lately, Nate, yesterday on 301. Deron Bland being back is pretty huge. So
that alone,
just getting dudes back, might be a reason that they find themselves as the top 10 defense here since week 8.
And I think that's really this defense like looked what I imagined them looking. I may maybe playing against Drew Lock helps a little bit on Thursday.
Yeah.
But that helps a little bit. And and the rest of that Giants team, I'll call them a team, I guess. Giants group. I don't know even if I want to call them a franchise. But I even when we did
men
our
in blue.
Yeah, men in blue. Yes. The New York Football Giants, the New York football team. When we were doing our kind of funeral stuff, I looked up a stat, our funeral stuff. I looked up a stat on the Cowboys with Parsons on the field. They are a top 10 defense too. Not even just, you know, this is going to break down pretty neatly for when he came back from injury, but they, in the combined success rate and explosive play rate, when Parsons on the field, they're the 9th best defense. And that's just Parsons on the field. So you're mentioning that getting all these guys back. I mean, that the DeMarcus Lawrence injury has been kind of underrated, I feel like, nationally.
Yeah,
what a hell of a player he is, especially against the run. And he's a good pass rusher. He's not elite, but a good pass rusher, but just such a good run defender. So, like, all right, having him back, or and then all these DBs and everything, like, you can feel it feel more real with this defense. Of course, when you have Parsons back on the field. And Zimmer has, I don't have the exact number on me because it's been updated, but Zimmer has put Parsons at 3 technique, which is defensive tackle. Mm-hmm. A lot this year, and that has been something I kind of was curious of how he would use him. I talked about Zimmer and using the double mug looks, 2 linebackers over the center, and Overshown has been good as that kind of like that's the guy that's really like accelerated where I was like, oh, your role in this is really, really like you're better at this than I thought you would be, and that's been a revelation. But then I thought Parsons would be the one next to him. Parsons has been the defensive tackle in these looks, and he's part of the guy that's looping and the guy that's gets to do all the fun stuff in those looks. What a weapon. Like, so, cause now it's the threat of, oh, he's going against your guard. All right. How many teams have 2 good guards? Not a ton. And they're going against Parsons. Okay. Even if you are going against a good guard, all right, we're going to loop you or twist you or have you doing something to create edginess on the offensive line. So like watching those two go at it just on those looks has really been fun. And really like that's where you feel the Zimmer third down weaponization of this defense. So I'm kind of, all right, now they get more horses. Like, okay, this actually could be pretty fun. Like, so I think obviously we're talking about them, but I do think the arrow is going to just keep pointing up even with these injuries back or these guys come back from injury. Even before that, just some of the stuff schematically, I can finally see Zimmer, what he was trying to do with these guys. But obviously injuries happen and the rest of the Cowboys season happened to them.
Yeah. I mean, this defense at times was truly a joke. I don't think they're a joke now at this point. And they get the Bengals here this week in Carolina in week 15.
We'll see. He's been better.
Week 16 against the Bucks. That's a tough test. The Eagles in week 17. So Dallas' season's over, but there's going to be between us talking about this defense kind of improving, Dak talking to our own Jory Epstein yesterday and saying like he basically wants Mike McCarthy back and be able to coach on his terms.
Yeah.
McCarthy's coming back, folks. Like, this is
interesting word choice there. Yeah.
Very, very interesting word choice from Dak speaking with our own Jory Epstein there. So people can check that out on Yahoo Sports. They should. It was a good get by Jory. Dallas' season's over, but they might be able to finish a little bit better than maybe originally thought. So that is interesting to note. All right. Let's take our first break, Nate. We come back. We're going to talk through the thing you are nerding out about, and I cannot wait to hear why that is right after this. All right, we're back. Nate, the thing you are nerding out about this week here for the Fantasy Film Room is the Will Levis experience. That's what you wrote on the doc. Tell us why, buddy.
It's not even like, oh yeah, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. I'm just enjoying the experience of watching Will Levis now that he's come back from injury. He's volatile. I'll leave it at that. He is right now rostered on 16% of Yahoo fantasy teams. I just looked up before the show. He has now, since coming back from injury, has put up fantasy games of 19, 16.6, 17.1, and 16.1 fantasy points. So why am I talking about Will Levis? He's playing better, believe it or not. He is not making as catastrophic of mistakes. He's trying.
what praise.
What a praise for Will Levis. Yeah, it's not as catastrophic, but there's still some more. He's making slightly better decisions, and it's encouraging that he is getting to the point where it's like, oh, I'm under pressure. I'm not going to try some hook shot or something crazy or take a sack. He's just getting rid of the ball and digging it. Or you can tell it's not always natural for him to play that way. He's a competitive guy, but he is trying to do these things on top of the high end flash throws. I would say the Commanders game was just a wonky game script that had, like, kind of just got out of hand quickly. But even before that, just other games that he's been playing in, you can just see him making better choices. You can see all the high end throws that he can make, of course. But I think the floor is getting lifted up slightly from, oh my God, this is the most hysterical, funny thing I've ever seen, to, okay, this is slightly funny, you know, that where some of his bad plays are just, they bring a little smile to your face as opposed to just like outright laughter. And really, though, is that his home stretch for the last month of the season. Also, by the way, guys, it's really hard. It's week 14 for me to come up with some new thing you guys haven't heard of. So that's why I bring it up Will Levis. But for the last 4 weeks of the season, he's going against the 32nd ranked defense by DVOA, or I'm sorry, in just terms of fantasy points, and this is DVOA, but he has 32nd ranked defense, passing defense, 30th ranked passing defense, the 20th ranked passing defense, and the 32nd ranked passing defense, because he has two games against the Jags. So it's a setup of what the remaining schedule is for this Titans team, a Titans team that's trying. Like, they're trying to do things on offense. They have not white flagged this. They're trying to see what their offensive line is, what Will Levis is, what they have weapons wise. You know, Westbrook and Kine is going to just catch another touchdown on one. You know, he's just going to be the designated hitter.
We're going to get to that.
Okay, but it's that's why I'm not saying full out bullish. I'm not saying anything like where I'm like, oh, this is the long term answer for the Titans. But it went for me for like, oh, okay, this experiment, maybe move on from. So like, okay, I want to see how this last month looks, because he is making, I think, again, that floor is looking a little bit better for him on top of the high end 1% throws that he can make. It's all the minutia with him, and it's looking a little better, just a little better. So I want to see it this last month. So yeah, nerding out a little bit about Levis and maybe just a little bit more positive experience while watching him.
Oh yeah, like when the first start of the season, then he got hurt. I was like, well, there's no shot. He's done in Tennessee. They'll be looking for a quarterback next year.
Same,
but a lot of teams are going to run into this, man. A lot of teams are going to run into the fact that, as you've said and as others have said, it's not that great of a quarterback class. And right now, they'd be picking seventh in the NFL draft. Like, how many – and you know the damn Raiders, the Giants. Yeah. I mean, some of these teams up there are taking – Jets are above them right now. They're taking quarterbacks. Like, you want to take the fourth quarterback potentially in a weak quarterback class? I don't – or just rock with Will Levis again. I agree with you. It's going to be dependent on the next 4 weeks here, or well, the next five, because obviously they have Houston week 18. But that is a great schedule. You mentioned Jags, Bengals, Colts, Jags, and then Texans in week 18. He might play himself out of that job in week 18. We'll see about that. But you're so right that this last stretch has been good. Among quarterbacks over the last 4 weeks that have played 3+ games, he's fourth in yards per attempt. At 8.35. You know who he's right behind? Jameis Winston. You know what I said about Will Levis in the offseason? He's going to be this generation's Jameis Winston. Yes. They have a literal exact 9.3 ADOT in this stretch as well. So that take is aging a little bit better than it was at the beginning portion of the season. But
that's how he is, though. He's going to give chances to both teams, and it's just when he gets hot, it's fireworks. It's like, oh my God, like, yeah, we're going to give you a chance. But then you're going to have stretches where turns the ball over three straight drives and you're like, why is this guy starting for us? But
yeah,
like, I'm glad you brought up the quarterback draft point. That's what we're not talking about. We haven't done our Titans obituary, I think, for this season yet. But I that's how I've looked at it. It was like, I would rather roll with Levis and just see what I've got, especially if he's and I know coaches do like his personality and how he works and everything. So I'd much rather roll with that and give him another year. And then if it's not, doesn't work, rip it off for next year's class, you know, 2026 class. Because the 2025 class, I could just tell you guys right now, like Levis has more of a chance than a lot of those guys. I mean, I'm squinting just to even say a guy should be a first rounder at this point. Yeah. I know guys are getting mocked in the top 10, including on me and Charles's mock, but it's not like they're graded.
You don't
that
love
way.
Doing it.
No, I don't. I know quarterbacks get inflated, but it's even hard for me to put guys in the 20s right now on my big board. It's like, it's not a great class. And it's eye of the beholder. And Levis has as much traits as those other guys do that might go really high.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be interesting to watch the Levis experience just from a practical standpoint. Because, yeah, I mean, I think Will Levis, you could play him in super flex in some of these matchups. That's pretty great.
Yeah.
But including some of the other players on the roster, Calvin Ridley, probably still an every week fantasy starter. Tony Pollard, that's the thing I care about here, Nate. I keep bringing this up on the show. I fell ass backwards into a couple of Tony Pollard shares this year. It wasn't like looking to draft Tony Pollard. Yeah. It's like, well, I need a running back. And like, he's one of the few players that if you waited at running back, you actually fell into a decent experience there.
Right.
So I care about this Titans offense staying afloat and continuing to try, because I'm going to need Tony Pollard as like a running back two, running back three type down the stretch, especially in some of these matchups. Looking forward to that. But obviously the other part of this is Nate, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. What's the deal? Because I have no take. I have no take on Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. And like I've said this on the show before, I'll say it one last time. I swear I won't say it after this. He is such a random player, Nate, that not only have I never charted him for reception perception, and I've charted some weird players over the last decade plus. Nobody's ever asked until like the last few weeks. Nobody's ever been like, hey, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine kind of plays. This is not the first time he's played a lot of snaps for the team.
No,
he's been out there before. He's kind of, I've said that he's sort of like the Darius Slayton to the Giants, where they keep trying to not play him, but then he just finds his way onto the field
all the time. Yeah, yeah.
But before this stretch, nobody's ever asked me to chart Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, who also has like the most needlessly long name in the NFL. I'm tired of saying it so much. What's the deal?
NWI doesn't really
that doesn't roll off the tongue. Yeah, yeah, like
it sounds like I did something. I had too many beverages or something.
Yeah, right. Sounds like someone I got to plead out in court or whatever. Anyways, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, do you have a film take on him? Because I do not.
Nope. You know, it's no. He's 27. It's kind of what this is. What he is. He's getting like he's deserving of a roster spot. I mean, in real football terms. But I think right now it's just circumstances with how they're doing so many shot plays, and then he's the vertical guy on those. And Levis is going like, yeah, I'll take him. You know, yeah, I mean, I'm going to take my alert. I'm going to take my vertical. I know Ridley said a couple, but that's just, it's a lot of posts, a lot of overs. He's to me, he's a vertical guy, you know, outside vertical winning guy. And I think Levis just pairs well with him. But I think it's right now the touchdowns have just been, you know, crazy high because of just the circumstances of the play. But I have no real opinion on him. I'm not saying a guy, oh, you got to stash him. You got to do anything big. Because I just think because he's not just a guy. I don't want to use that slur. He's just more like an average starter to me. You know, I'm not nothing, not a needle mover. He's just a big, I'm not afraid. Benefiting from circumstances. I was going to say a victim of circumstances. Benefiting from the circumstances right now and just what's going on. So no real film takes on him. Just a vertical stretching guy that's has a good quarterback that's working out for him.
Yeah, I mean, shoot. It's something. I don't think I'm about to chart Nick Westbrook either. So, I mean, just we'll see what happens.
All of his stats are like right in line with his career rates too. It's like nothing. Yeah, it's, you know,
he's just catching touchdowns. And he's like just hopefully catching touchdowns. If you gotta like find your way to starting him, I think your team might be in a little bit of trouble. But hey, he'll probably score another. He's definitely going to score a few more touchdowns with that schedule down the stretch. Jags, right. Twice, Bengals, Colts. So I don't know. I guess you could do worse. I don't really know what to say.
It's a dice
but
roll.
The Will Levis stuff is really interesting, both from a long-term perspective, from a dynasty perspective, but also just the rest of the season. That is, if you want a reason to stay engaged with the Titans, which I actually thought they were going to make this segment about like defenses that improve, but their defense has fallen off a little bit.
Right, I know.
That'll get them in more of these like potential high scoring shootout games over the next 4 weeks. So if you want a reason to stay engaged with the Titans beyond the fact that we're rooting for Tony Pollard, because I said we're rooting for Tony Pollard, the next 4 weeks, like watching Will Levis and see if he can hang on to this job long term is a reason to do
it. It's just so funny looking at Levis stats. And actually, I was talking to Charles about this before the show, is that like all of his success rate stuff is never going to be high because he is just the ultimate grenade thrower. He's as boom bust as it gets. And that's why the Westbrook and Kine thing's funny. It's like, yeah, he might get a touchdown on it, but he also might finish with one target for 0 yards. I just looked it up because I was like, oh, maybe there's a stat. So since week 9, he's last in dropback success rate. Okay. So last. And this is me saying that he's playing positively. He is 14th in EPA per dropback above Bryce Young, Kyler, Justin Herbert, Darnold, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, Geno Smith, Caleb, Cousins, not that hard, Stroud. Rodgers. Rodgers is dead last since week 9. He's just below Stafford. So it's like that's how he is, though. It's not gonna be down to down sexy, but he might get you for a nice 60-yard touchdown, nice boom bust for your receivers.
Honestly, now I'm rooting for Levis to stick in this job next year. Rooting for like one or two more receiver, like some interesting rookie and maybe like a wayward vet, like in the Jerry Jeudy, what he's getting with Jameis Winston right now to go to Tennessee, because we need more of these dudes in the NFL, Nate. Yeah. Because it's
the juicers.
I'm probably like biased towards receivers and stuff like that because of what I'm the work I'm doing, but it's so frustrating watching film on these receivers and charting them and be like, these guys are open. Like, I don't want to, I'm trying to be careful with my language and my words here, but like, can somebody please like just be a big boy and throw the ball down the field and like just be okay with making mistakes? And I know coaches are listening to me being like, no, do not make mistakes. Are you, Eberflus is losing it at home listening to, because that's, he's got time to listen to podcasts now. He's like, no, we can't have the quarterback make a mistake. We can't be doing that. Like these guys like Jameis and these guys like Will Levis, that's why they're Ponzi schemes, they're pump and dump schemes for these receivers. Like, get in there, juice up the numbers, and then get out.
I don't need the nickel and diming. I just need launch balls. I just want to see some bombs getting thrown. I'm with you. Do you ever play Halo?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't played video games in like, and I'm not saying this to be like, look at me. But I haven't really played video games consistently in probably like a decade. What have I been doing the last decade? I've been charting routes like a dork. I'm not taking a victory lap on this. The only time I got back into video games beyond playing like Mario Kart when I was drunk, during the pandemic, I played like all the 3 original Halo games again.
Oh, nice. Well, I was gonna say it's rockets only at Hang 'Em High. That's Will Levis.
That is Will Levis.
And these quarterbacks, we need more rockets only at Hang 'Em High. I don't need pistols. I don't need any of that.
God, you've never said anything that's hit hard. I know.
That finally went over the fence with you.
There it is, baby. Yeah, no, you got to stick with like video games from the era when I was in middle school.
Yeah, I got you right there.
Thank you. That's perfect. Yeah. Okay. No more baseball refs. No more basketball refs.
Tom Thibodeau minutes usage references. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you. That would be preferable. See, we're learning each other. We're getting.
It's only week 14. We'll get there.
It's only week 14, and I did not expect us to have a long Will Levis discussion in week 14.
No, it's good.
But that is what happened here. So I'm interested now to see what happens with this team over the next month and then into next season. But for now, we're gonna take our final break. When we come back, we'll get into our injury report segment and our Thursday night preview right after this. All right, we're back. And before we dive into our Thursday night preview, let's take a look at this week's injury report presented by healthcare.gov. Each week, Nate and I pick one injury we are monitoring that could have a major fantasy ripple effect this week. It can be a defender that leaves a matchup to exploit on offense. It can be a starter that goes down, opening up a role for a backup. It can be anything. And this week, Nate, my pick, I mean, it's got to be Isaac Grendo of the San Francisco 49ers, because this is This is why you lift all them weights, right? This is why you stash them backup running backs, even though he's the backup to the backup, and that really doesn't logically work out here. But because so injuries happen, chaos hits the running back position, and people get elevated. So perfect example of this is Isaac Garendo here for the San Francisco 49ers. The Niners offense is obviously not what we want it to be. It's not what we thought it was going to be coming into the year, but still, this has been an efficient run game. It's been a productive run game at time, even if it hasn't been the weaponized explosive unit that we thought. But I will say, though, I don't know much about Garendo, Nate, but I do know he's got juice. He's explosive. He can rip off big runs. We've seen that this year. I'm curious, like, you have obviously more exposure to Garendo. Who is he as a player?
Yeah, as he had some time at Wisconsin before transferring to Louisville. He can roll. I mean, anyone that can look at his 40 time, go look it up. He had one of the fastest ones at running back in this year's class. His vision is just okay. I'll put it at okay. So he can be kind of a boom bust running back. But the thing when you're in the 49ers offense is you're going to get chances at it. He might need a pathway sometimes to get there. But I think with some of that, what the 49ers do, some of those outside hitting runs, some toss runs, gives him the runway to kind of pick up that speed and roll. But that's what he is. He is a flyer, a glider too. His running style is more like that as well, where he's striding out as opposed to maybe just an explosive, really, you know, bursty, choppy type of guy. So that when you're this circumstances, the 49ers, he's going to get those touches. Like, it's not going to be the 8 to 10 touch. Okay, maybe you break one. So he's going to have some frustrating 0 yard gains, 1 yard gains, because he might miss a hole. But he can break one, and he might pop one, and he's going to be alive. Any running back in the Shanahan offense is going to be live, but he could really be one where he can break a 60-yarder, a 70-yarder, which is different than when Jordan Mason's been in there. Really couldn't be any more opposite than Jordan Mason.
Yeah.
And now, you know, McCaffrey hasn't really played much this year, but Garendo gives a little bit more of that explosive play element than maybe when Mason was in there.
Yeah, in terms of percentage of his carries, Isaac Garendo's seen the majority of his carries at a zone concept run, 76%, which is the most if you look at, like, relative to Jordan Mason, relative to Christian McCaffrey. He's got the highest rate on zone concept runs, 6.19 yards per carry on those zone concept runs. So I think this is more like what we used to think of the Shanahan backs. That's what we're going to get out of Isaac Garendo here. It's not going to be perfect, but we're going to hit some big plays on those zone concept runs. So, Nate, give me your pick for the injury to watch this week.
My injury to watch is another running back. Was J.K. Dobbins is now on IR with an MCL sprain. So the Chargers run game can be a little the ideas are right, but the executions can be leave you wanting a little more. But they're going to run the ball. Even with Justin Herbert at quarterback, this is the formula. So it's kind of a pick your poison. Do you want to go Gus Edwards? He's going to get his touches. Are that's going to be 8 touches? Is it going to be 10? I'm not sure, but he is going to get those touches. He's going to pound the rock. He'll probably get him a short yardage. But also the other running back that they have, Kimani Vidal, who has some pass catching chops, has caught a touchdown earlier this year. That, you know, has a little bit more of a 3-down ability than Edwards does. The thing is, I'm not sure what the split is of these two, but they're going to get the touches with Dobbins out. So it is one of those, are you feeling lucky? If you need a desperation play, maybe one that's available here, maybe that's not as many teams. You know, this is a type of one that maybe you can roll in one of your spots this week because of just what the Chargers formula is and just the opportunities that this offense is going to give them.
Yeah, snaps went 24 Gus Edwards, 12 Kimani Vidal, 6 for Hassan Haskins last week. I think we do need to see more of Vidal in the passing game specifically, because that's where Dobbins, I think they're going to feel his loss the most.
Yeah.
So I like that call out. I think that Vidal is not a guy you can play right now. Like, if you have to, and I say this as somebody that has to play Gus Edwards in 2 dynasty leagues. What a disgusting thing to say.
I have to play him one line.
They ain't competing for championships, let me tell you that. But
the name of my team name in that league is Junkie for Genty. So, yeah, it tells you where I'm at right now.
I'm too caught in the middle. I won't be getting Genty, so I'll be hoping that you said this is a decent running back class. I'm hoping for one of those other ones on this team. But, yeah, as somebody that has to play Gus Edwards in 2 dynasty leagues because of injuries, I think if you have to start Gus Edwards, team's in a little bit of trouble. So if the Chargers continue to feel that way, maybe we see more of Vidal. He's a guy that's at least a decent stash candidate if you can swing it right now. But, all right, good injury report segment there. Let's get to our Thursday night preview here, Nate. This is a big one.
Packers big one.
At Lions inside Ford Field, 51.5 point over under. The Packers are 3.5-point road dogs here. The Lions obviously are the favorite, but 3.5 points is not, I mean, considering how good the Lions are, it still shows they're live to potentially lose this game here. It's going to be a big one. I don't know. Where do we want to start? Cause this is a pretty electric one.
This is a pretty electric one. Actually, I'm going to go with Josh Jacobs over rushing. And this is even with the Lions defense being really good, stopping the run. And we already had a segment about it, how I still think it's going to be a really good defense, even with some of the linebacker injuries. But that is where I'm coming to, is the linebacker injuries. And also short week, division opponent, all that type of stuff. I just think that this Packers team has really come up with some run stuff. They're going to commit to the run. They want Jacobs on the field. It's at 69.5 right now. And I think he's going to get a lot of touches. And I think that just, this is what the Packers want to do. They might have more opportunities to do so out of any personnel grouping too. Like if they think they can get him out two tight ends, if they think him get out three wides, the term I've kind of fallen into using is natural answers. And I just think the Packers run game wise have natural answers. They do kind of against anyone, but maybe a Lions defense that's reeling a little bit, kind of, oh, okay, we got to figure out, oh, is Dave Long playing for us? Oh, okay. Like, you know, they might be caught this week, the Lions, as it's not a short week because they played last Thursday, but maybe get through this week. Okay, now we got a mini bye, and then they revamp themselves. But, I mean, it's a huge game. They need to win. I mean, this is significant for the number one seed for the Lions, you know, with the Eagles rolling too. So, but that is my first one that I'm looking at, is Josh Jacobs getting it done on the ground. So over 69.5 rushing.
Okay, before we
start, stay with the Packers.
But before we put it on the board, can I maybe convince you, instead of to do the rushing yards, because this is such a good defense, can we do rush attempts, which is only 17.5, pretty big number, but it's number one, better odds. Number two, I definitely think they will be committed to the ground game. They will be committed to Josh Jacobs. And just the yardage there, I think, just like last week, honestly, against the Dolphins, where the attempts hit by a lot and the rushing yards came in a little lower. I wonder if that might, I am a big, big freaking coward when it comes to betting running backs. And I almost always end up doing the attempts. So that's just, maybe this is my personal.
No, I like that. Yeah, and the last time they played, he only got 13 carries, but that was just because the game script. No, I like this. I'm just even kind of just looking at maybe like kind of similar type of games. No, I like this because like, you know, maybe a defense that they've had where they, you know, like even the 49ers game, like he just got so many carries. The Dolphins defense is actually a pretty good carryover for what they might try to do. Yeah, I'll shift that. I'll shift that to carries. What was that? 16.5, 17.5?
17.5.
17.5? Yeah, here it is. Yeah, let's take that. Let's take that over. -105.
It's a bigger number, but I mean, nobody else is getting work in that backfield, and I do think they're going to be very committed to the run. Okay, I got one here, unless you got another one. We'll just jump off here. My favorite one, though, is definitely Jaden Reed over 48.5 receiving yards. I'm hunting another Jaden Reed spike week. We got one last week, but we didn't get a lot of yards, which is nice here, because I think we get a lower number. I think he can get 50 yards in this damn game. He went over 100 against the Lions earlier this year, and they, like I mentioned earlier, they're second in terms of yards allowed to slot receivers. Jaden Reed is their primary slot receiver, and I think this is a week where we will be hunting explosives against this Lions defense that you mentioned has injuries on the back end and at linebacker. So where just most of those routes are going to come from, Jaden Reed over the middle of the field, I think will be the spot here. And if you're listening to this, like, try to do this earlier. Well, I don't know, because Dobbs might end up playing in this game, which maybe the number will even come down there. So I don't know, but 48.5 does feel pretty good to me.
I like that. I looked up some, I think actually for our little healthcare.gov thing last week, I was looking up the stats of how the Lions were against the slot. I think they were 30th in success rate or something of that sort. So I really, really like that one. And anytime you get to cheer for Jaden Reed, that's just fun. Yeah. that's the type of game that you want anyway. So I'm with you on that one. I'm trying to think, let's put that one on the board. I'm with that one all the way. I don't know any other Packers ones I like. Like, love stats are just so hard.
Yeah.
Because it's like, because they launch stuff. So it's like yards wise, I could see him only going for 220 because he only hits a couple throws and they run the ball a bunch. Or I could see him going for 350, you know, if he gets hot and they catch him. So like he's kind of a stay
away. He's number one in yards per attempt in that like Will Levis stretch that we were talking about earlier. Yeah. The last 4 weeks. He's number one in yards per attempt. So it's like he's only dropped back 73 times, but he's averaging 10.26 yards per attempt.
Just launch everything. I know. And then like this is the type of defense that he might get that. So maybe like. Oh, I don't know. The yards is at 252 and a half. And that's like, God, that's a good number. God, you guys in Vegas are really good at this.
Did you see actually before we move off this, did you see our buddy I think it was JP Acosta tweeted the Charmander evolution from Will Levis, Jameis Winston to Jordan Love as the Charmander, Charmeleon, and Charizard. It's perfect that we talked about this because I wanted to find a way to bring that up on the show. But that is like, hey, this is a show that's made some Pokemon analogies this year too. So that is like right in that. See, that's in my wheelhouse of references.
That is perfect. Yes. Yeah. Jordan Love is the Charizard of that because I love watching him play. I really do. Like Love is just entertaining to me because, and I think some people get on me about this and like, oh, you just like the big arm guys. It's not so much like, oh, a guy with a strong arm. It's a guy that's willing to use it. Like, you know, that's why I get frustrated with some other quarterbacks in the league. I'm like, well, you can make that throw. Try it. You know, Love sometimes is like, well, you don't have to try everything.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like, you don't have to go to the festival and try every drug. You know, that it's just, but that's kind of how he is a little bit. Man, I just want to bet on him, but just like throw a bet out because I just think he is entertaining. But these numbers are just a little too high. Like, pass attempts under might be another one. It's 33 and a half. But that's the thing, too, is I could see a game script, a game path that unfolds that they go, oh, okay, they're low in the run. Okay, we're going to be just chucking it and then just do. Or they get down if their defense can't stop anyone. So I'm kind of staying away from Love.
Yeah, I hear you. That's just tough, again, because of just the volatility. Here, if you want to have a bad time, betting an under, what do we think about potentially Jahmyr Gibbs under 66 and a half rushing yards? Here's my logic on this.
I'm with you.
Threefold logic. Number one, Packers, since week 8, are actually fifth in rushing success rate allowed. They've been a good run defense. Two, they split this backfield anyways. People were nonstop whining and complaining about Jahmyr Gibbs averaging 9. I was like, you can tell that the Thanksgiving watchers are out in force here. It's like, Jahmyr Gibbs should request a trade. David Montgomery has 20 plus carries and he's averaging 9 yards. I'm like, yo, congratulations. I guess you never watched the Lions before once in your damn life. All right. Anyways, that's number two. Number three, this is the let's go down conspiracy island here. I don't know if you've seen this, that Jahmyr Gibbs, I guess, posted on TikTok, like some language or whatever on the whiteboard. You know, maybe he gets like one quarter in the doghouse for giving away the state secrets, even though Dan Campbell's like, I don't care. Post everything. He's saying all the right things. He's supporting his guy. But just maybe a little bit more Montgomery, just as I'm not saying a punishment, but a light doghousing for Jahmyr Gibbs.
I like that. A light doghouse.
That went from a real to dumbass like reasons for this bet. But those are my three pronged reasons.
I liked it though. You're covering the bases. I like the light doghousing is a great phrase. It's just a little light doghousing on them. Also, that whiteboard thing. It's one of the like some of the phrasing is pretty fun. Like some there's a couple in there that they should be. I'm surprised they haven't gotten in trouble for. But with what the code words were, but the still
actually,
gotta
I haven't
stop
even
it.
Looked at it.
I'll tell you one off air. I don't want to get in trouble, but you know, anytime there's a bootleg or naked code words, it's always like these coaches are always the same, like you know, naked always leads into centerfold and playboy and like hustler boy. And just every I know, dude, it's just you got boomer coaches, man. You still like a lot of smart football people have always been around with the code word stuff, with the offense stuff. It's like, well, you still gotta stop it, like, and so that's always, and that's what Dan Campbell basically said. It's like, yeah, they can have it. I mean, yeah, we all have each other's stuff. You still gotta stop it. That's why maybe it is a light dog housing, but this is I don't think it's going to be one of those where it's like, oh, they hate him. They're going to like they're never going to play him ever again. I do have a Jahmyr Gibbs one I like.
OK, go for
over catches.
Mm.
2.5. It's -120.
Oh, 2.5. Yeah. That's how they're getting him out of the doghouse. Once they doghouse him, he doesn't, and he's so ripping off a 50-yard run now because I'm in.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, 100%.
First quarter,
but too. Yeah, first quarter. First carry of the game, 50-yard touchdown, Jahmyr Gibbs. No, he's after his like doghousing, like, hey, Jahmyr, we love you, buddy. Like, let's set you up a couple screens here. Remember, you're part of the whole deal. Yeah. It all works together.
I love this narrative we're building here.
So stupid. Yeah.
They put him out on the field. They're like, all right, we'll get you on a little choice route here. Okay, cool. There you go. But no, there's actually some scheme stuff here. Just the Packers. They like to play single high. The linebackers can be left, you know, Quay Walker can leave some to be desired with some of the choices he makes. And so I think Ben Johnson might attack that and maybe look for some of those choice routes or something of that sort. And and even cover three and single high stuff can lead to, okay, all right, quarterback goes back, Goff's looking, okay, well, they're playing over the top. All right, I'll just check it down. You know, just make him play patient. So Gibbs there as well, as for over reception. So that's my narrative that I'm building on that set. I see a Tim Patrick 21.5 yards line. Gonna see Tim Patrick making the board.
Oh yeah. When can we need the Allen Robinson one over 0.5 catches. We bet the mortgage on that. No, my last one though is just because the odds are really good. Jared Goff over 1.5 touchdowns at -110. Okay. I think this is a game where, yeah, obviously the Lions can come in here and establish the hell out of the run. But if you just look at the way this defense has played it recently, they've been a much more gettable pass defense than run defense. So I could see Goff getting a couple touchdown passes in this one.
And the designer plays, and it's in the dome, you know. So yeah, no, I'm with you on that one. Ben Johnson loves these national TV game. Ben Johnson's gonna have some designs, man. He loves building that resume on national TV games.
Yeah, where's our Penei Sewell over?
Yeah, no Penei Sewell stats in here. I mean, come on, anytime touchdown scorer.
All right, so these are the five we have. We got Josh Jacobs over rushing 69.5 yard, or excuse me, Josh Jacobs over rush attempts 17.5. We got Jaden Reed over 48.5 receiving yards. We've got the Jahmyr Gibbs light doghousing parlay of 66.5 rushing yards under, but the over on 2.5 catches, yes. And then Goff over 1.5 passing touchdowns. I think I like this. This is good. I can narrative wise, it all kind of plays together here. Unfortunately, the game will completely go sideways and none of this will work out. But no, it's a good one. And I will just say, from a fantasy perspective, you got dudes in this game, find a way to start them. I think it's going to be a good fantasy environment.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch this one, especially in the dome. Don't have to worry about snow. Don't have to worry about any of that stuff. So I think it's going to be a fun one. Two very good teams. Like, the Packers are cooking. Packers are a good team. Packers are two teams that actually can win the Super Bowl. Like, as opposed to like, oh, you know, this guy team's a playoff team. This, in my estimation, obviously the Lions are one of the best teams, but Packers too, I think, are playing very good football. So yeah, I think this game's
I'm in one super flex league where it's called the Roto World Friends and Family Deathmatch. So it's with a bunch of people that folks would know. Your boy is in first place. And so shout out to me. Number two, I've got Jordan Love and Jared Goff are my two super flex quarterbacks. Jahmyr Gibbs is on this team. Jaden Reed is also on this team. So I'm going to either be in a great mood or totally upset by Thursday night when I go to bed.
Don't even have to worry. Like your whole team's playing. It's kind of nice. You go into Sunday, you're like, oh, whatever. This is all right. I have a league where every receiver on my roster is on a bye week. For it's a redraft league. So yeah, that's a fun one. I didn't even realize I made that issue for myself. So until this week, and I was like, wait a sec.
Better find yourself some Brandon Cooks off the waiver wire or something my God. Like that.
I think I went. I think Alec Pierce was on the waivers. I went to get a little Alec Pierce spike watch, hopefully this week.
They're on bye. They're on bye.
It wasn't Alec Pierce. Dang it. That's why I didn't pick him up. It was not Alec Pierce. That's hold on. I have to like look this up now because I picked up someone like atrocious. Oh, this isn't atrocious. I picked up Michael Wilson.
Could be worse. So, I mean,
that's not atrocious. I actually like that one.
I did pick up Brandon Cooks because I have in that same league, actually. It's Cortland Sutton and Michael Pittman are on bye. Okay. So I had to pick up and probably start Brandon Cooks. So go Cowboys. All right. On that note, Nate, tell the people what you're working on this week as we close it out here.
We got Football 301, recording that a little bit later today, actually. So it should be out early, just like this show is. And then also writing about the NFC West, kind of just what to make of it. Handicap, I don't know if I'm handicapping it, just kind of go what these teams are, what they're good at, chances for the playoffs, yada, yada, because it's a fun division, fun teams. I like talking about all the NFC West teams, even if the 49ers make me a little sad.
Yeah. Hell yeah, that's going to be a good piece to read. I'm very interested to hear what you have to say about the Seattle Seahawks right now. On that note, that is going to do it for today. This has been the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast presented by healthcare.gov. On Friday, as usual, Andy Behrens and Tara Roberts join me to preview all of Sunday's Week 14 action. Until then, we are out.